sad, the feeling is right. You fall in love for the first time. Heartbeat and kisses so sweet. Summertime love in the moonlight. I see you.
The Dr. Jones Conservative Radio Report. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Let's get this show started. We're going to talk about the czar. Okay, tonight's show is a show that I like to call Meet the Czars. It's been a while since we have met with the Czars and talked about Obama's shadow government, as I like to call it, because in effect, that's really what it is. It's a shadow government. It's a system where there are a group of regulatory czars who personnel who operate underneath the radar and direct policy coming directly, issued directly from the president. And it's important that we know who these people are and exactly what it is they do. Because I think that, in my humble opinion, these czars have not been exposed. I mean, a czar is not accountable to Congress. They are not regulated by Congress. They are not given approval through Congress. And so they are accountable to no one but the President of the United States. And what we're seeing here with the czars that are in play right now is that they are exercising a certain amount of power that has been reserved for very few, a select few entities in our history. So let's go ahead and start with the czars. Now, my favorite czar. First, let's get out of the way what exactly a czar is. And then I'm going to run down the current list of czars within the Obama administration. And here's a current list. And potential czars as well. Now, originally the title czar is derived from Caesar, meant emperor in the European medieval sense of the term. And that is a ruler who claims the same rank as a Roman emperor, with the approval of another emperor, or a supreme ecclesiastical official, for example, the Pope. Occasionally, the word could be used to designate other non-Christian supreme rulers. In Russia and Bulgaria, the imperial connotations of the term were blurred with time, and by the 19th century, it had come to be viewed as the equivalent of a king. So, here you go, folks. Your rulers of the Obama administration, the first ruler or sub-ruler, is the aptly named Afghanistan-Pakistan czar. That's right. We have an Afghanistan-Pakistan czar. And his name is Richard Holbrooke. And he is our Afghanistan-Pakistan czar. Interesting. And in a little bit, we'll go into what our Afghanistan-Pakistan czar does. The next czar on our list is the AIDS czar. And our AIDS czar is headed up by Jeffrey Crawley. Did y'all know that we had an AIDS czar? Well, we do. We also have an auto recovery czar. And the auto recovery czar's name is Ed Montgomery. In addition to the auto recovery czar, we have the auto recovery czar is a man by the name of Edward Montgomery. The behavioral science czar, he has not been appointed yet, but he's on the list. We have a bailout czar, Herbert Allison Jr. We have a border czar, Alan Bernson, former U.S. attorney. We have a car czar, Ron Blum. We have a climate change czar by the name of Todd Stern. We have a copyright czar. It has not been appointed yet, but he is on the list. Yes, I said a copyright czar. Uh-huh. And we have a counter-terrorist czar. We have a cybersecurity czar. We have a disinformation czar. Yeah. Just like in the old Politburo, just like in any socialist country, every socialist dictator has a disinformation czar. Now, I wonder if our disinformation czar, Linda Douglas, does she spew disinformation, or is she there to counter disinformation? Interesting question. We have a domestic violence czar. We have a drug czar. We have an economic czar, Larry Summers. And then we have an economic czar too, Paul Volcker. We have an education czar, Arnie Duncan. We have an energy czar, Carol Browner. Well, she just crapped out, I think. We have a food safety czar. We have a government performance czar. We have a Great Lakes czar. Yeah. We had a green jobs czar by the name of Van Jones, but he, well, he's gone. And Bruce Riker, or Richter, I'm sorry, took over that. We have a Guantanamo closure czar. We have a health czar. We have an infotech czar, an intelligence czar, a Latin American czar, a Mideast peace czar, a Mideast peace policy czar, a pay czar, a regulatory czar, a religion czar, a safe schools czar, a science czar, a stimulus oversight czar, a Sudan czar, a TARP czar, a technology czar, a trade czar, an urban affairs czar, a war czar, a water czar, a weapons czar, a weapons of mass destruction czar. Potential czars, not yet verified, an income redistribution czar, no joke. A consumer financial protection czar, a.k.a. the mortgage czar, the land use czar, the radio internet fairness czar, the student loan czar, the voter list czar, the zoning czar. I wonder how many Americans realize how many czars there are within this administration. I wonder if how many Americans realize that we have so many czars functioning, shadow government. Now, originally there was the president, and then there was the president's cabinet. And that was it. And over time, the cabinet has expanded to the extent where I guess they're just not good enough. They're simply not, I mean, the job is just too much. So we have got to have diversity czars, the FCC diversity czar, Mark Lloyd. And I want you to go ahead and take a listen to Mr. Lloyd here, because he's one of my favorite czars. One of my least favorite, that is. Take a listen to this clown.
The challenge, I mean, I work for commercial television, for CNN, for NBC, for local stations, for network operations. And even those operations, the producers there, the writers and reporters there tend to come from very similar backgrounds, relatively privileged middle-class backgrounds. I came from a relatively privileged middle-class background. And they see very little of the rest of the
Love
world. News isn't even really what it was when I was working at CNN in the late 1990s. News is unfortunately more and more about just sort of commenting on the passing parade and reading news releases as they come out. It's hardly trying to put the pieces together of what's going on and why. It's often speculation about what might happen, about who might win a battle, but it's really not so much about how this came to be. What are the deeper meanings of what's going on here? What that means is that we have a set of stories that are told about what is normal and what is acceptable opinion. And these stories are very subtle. And so one wouldn't suggest, for example, that a story about the Pope dying ought to really consider his concern about the poor around the world, about the need to do whatever you can possibly do to avoid violence and physical conflict and war, of his really strong opposition to the war in Iraq. Instead, we get very nice stories about, you know, what a nice man he was, about how charismatic he was. Well, investigative reporting budgets have been cut dramatically. Investigative reporters, which are very expensive operations to run, because by and large, those reporters don't come up with stories for, you know, maybe sometimes weeks at a time. News operations now, which are under more and more pressure to raise money and to contribute to the profits that particularly the local news operations are making, and there's substantial profits in many of these local stations, particularly in big cities. These operations can't afford to have people not contributing daily to the newscast, particularly as the hours of the newscast expand. And so you end up with essentially very little budget for investigative reporting and very little investigative reporting being done. And again, even beyond the luxury of investigative reporting, you end up with reporters who have to put out much more product on a daily basis, who frankly have to do a much better job of getting along with places like the White House or the Speaker's office on the Hill or other offices if they're going to be able to get exclusives or other stories that are very valued. And so you don't find those reporters going very far astray from the press releases. The news business has changed dramatically in just 10 years. And what I hope independent television can provide really is a look into the diversity that is America. I don't think there's really anything more important in a democracy than that. Too many Americans who have useful, important contributions to make to the public debate, have the habit of thinking that they don't have a real contribution to make. And one of the things that I hope this channel will do is really aggressively go out and find ways to get those Americans who are silent to participate.
Okay. I know you heard what I just heard, but what the hell did we just hear? I always thought, growing up, that what he's talking about is the job of the private sector. It's the job of newspapers and television stations and newscasts and the nightly news and all of that. Since when should the government be involved in news dissemination and what type of news and reporters and what reporters report and how they report it and all of that? This is Mr. FCC Diversity Czar Mark Lloyd attempting to get the government involved in the very basic groundwork of reporting the news. So what should be reported, how it should be reported, what reporters should report, how do we finance reporters and get reporters to report what we want them to report or what we think is appropriate to be reported? Does anyone except me find this to be just a little odd, where the reporter is now being micromanaged by the United States government? Am I weird? Is it me? Am I going crazy here? Okay. Let's talk about the czar that I loathe the most. I mean, really. This guy has to be the worst czar in the history of czardom. He's the guy who believes that there are too many people on the planet, and that those people, that there should be forced abortions and mass sterilization. a planetary regime with the power of life and death over not only American citizens, but citizens worldwide. Doesn't it sound crazy? I sound like I'm some sort of a lunatic, doesn't I? Don't I? It sounds like, hey, Jones, what's up with you, dude? Have you been drinking? Did you just come back from happy hour? No. The man's name is John Holdren, and he is Obama's science czar. And he says, from his own lips, forced abortions and mass sterilization are needed to save the planet. In a book he authored in 1977, and that advocates for extreme totalitarian measures to control the population, this man has been appointed by President, your President, Barack Hussein Obama, to be America's science czar. The tyrannical fantasies of a nut, or merely the opinion of a person who now is in control of science policy in the United States, or perhaps both. Now, these ideas, among many other equally horrifying recommendations, were put forth by John Holdren, whom Barack Obama appointed director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. Assistant to the President for Science and Technology and co-chair of the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology, informally known in the United States as the Science Czar. In a book co-authored in 1977, the man now firmly in control of science policy in this country wrote that women could be forced to abort their pregnancies, whether they wanted to or not. The population at large could be sterilized by infertility drugs intentionally put into the nation's drinking water or in food. Single mothers and teen mothers should have their babies seized from them against their will and given away to other couples to raise. People who contribute to social deterioration, i.e. undesirables, I presume, could be required by law to exercise reproductive responsibility. In other words, be compelled to have abortions or to be sterilized. A transitional planetary regime should assume control over the global economy and also dictate the most intimate details of American lives using an armed international police force. Impossible, right? That must be, I'm exaggerating. This is a hoax. Billy, there is no reference to czars in the Constitution. And a little bit later this evening, or perhaps on my next show, I will explain the origins of the czars and how they came about here in the United States of America. In fact, I'll go into details on the origins of czars here in the United States of America. Good point, Billy. I'm glad you brought it up. So, because we need, it's important to know that. I hate to break the news to you guys, but this is not a hoax. This is not War of the Worlds with Orson Welles. This is not an exaggeration. John Holdren really did say those things. Not only did he write them, he said them. And this report contains the proof. There are photographs, scans, transcriptions of pages of the book I have here, authorized in 1977 by John Holdren and his close colleague, Paul Ehrlich, and Ann Ehrlich. It's all here. I will cite right now a direct quote from John Holdren, Ecoscience. That's the title of the book, Ecoscience. Look it up, please. Don't take my word for any of this. Now, here's what he said. Indeed, it has been concluded that compulsory population control laws, even including laws requiring compulsory abortion, could be sustained under the existing Constitution if the population crisis became sufficiently severe to endanger society. And that is a direct quote. Once more, you ask, because you didn't get it all? Your science czar, appointed by our president, Barack Hussein Obama, appointed, answers to no one except the president of the United States. No, not you, not me, not Congress, not the Senate, not the Supreme Court, not to the CIA or the DEA or the Defense Intelligence Agency, not to the military, but no, answers solely to the President of the United States of America, has stated for the record directly, indeed, it has been concluded that compulsory population control laws, even including laws requiring compulsory abortion, could be sustained under the existing Constitution if the population crisis becomes sufficiently severe to endanger the society. Where, in God's name, is that listed anywhere in the Constitution of the United States of America? I can only imagine. I can't imagine it. The next direct quote from Mr. Science Czar. I hope you're sitting down right now. One way to carry out this disapproval, that's what it's called, might be to insist that all illegitimate babies be put up for adoption, especially those born to minors who generally are not capable of caring properly for a child alone. If a single mother really wished to keep her baby, she might be obliged to go through adoption proceedings and demonstrate her ability to support and care for it. Adoption proceedings probably should be or should remain more difficult for single people than for married couples, in recognition of the relative difficulty of raising children alone. It should even be possible to require folks, pregnant single women, to marry or have abortions, perhaps as an alternative to placement for adoption, depending on the society. You heard it right here and right now. This is the science czar appointed under President Barack Obama. Do we got to get this guy out of here? Now, so we're going to go right now. We're going to go through a Fox News report that reports on potential confirmation for future czars. Check it out for a minute. And let me know what you think.
Welcome back. All right, you're looking at the screen and you're hearing the music. President Obama has appointed more than 30 czars who have a major influence on public policies. And even though these advisors amount to cabinet positions, they don't answer to Congress because, Brian, they don't have to be confirmed.
Yep, joining us right now, a guest who wants to change all that, from North Carolina, Congressman Patrick McHenry. Congressman, why now? Why, when we put up with czars through other administrations, do you think a line in the sand has to be drawn now?
Well, I think it should have been drawn in the sand a long time ago. The Constitution is clear, Brian, that the advice and consent of the Senate is required for high-ranking administration officials. And either these czars are high-ranking administration officials making policy, which is counter to the Constitution, or they're simply figureheads collecting a salary. It's apparent that they seem to be making some big decisions, whether it's a health care czar, the green job czar who resigned over the weekend, or the international climate change czar, Carol Browner, is trying to coordinate policy with the Department of Energy and the EPA. So it seems to me that it raises questions no matter the administration. And I think what's apparent is that the Obama administration has done what previous administrations have done, but they've done it in a much wider way.
Yeah,
right. The government spends money, and they're spending a lot more money. The government's been involved in health care, but they want government to take over health care. They've had a couple czars in previous administrations. Now they have dozens and dozens of czars in the first 8 months.
Right. And a lot of people were wondering, is this just friends of Obama who need work and you know, pay back a favor, or do they actually have the kind of power that a cabinet secretary would have, who, by the way, has to be confirmed? Here's my question for you, Congressman. I have really been sitting back and waiting for Republicans to stand up and speak out about this. You seem to be the first person to bring it to national attention that you actually have a problem with it. What kind of support have you had from other Republicans and Democrats, for that matter?
Well, just in 2 days, I've gotten great feedback from my colleagues. They love the idea, and I think you're going to see other Republicans really jump on board with this idea that they must testify. These czars must testify on Capitol Hill and be held accountable. And I agree with you, Gretchen. You know, Republicans need to stand up and fight and be vocal about what they're for, what they're against, and the plans they have for America. And the feedback, the idea that I got about the czars came from my constituents at town hall meetings. Very productive, very helpful to get that feedback, and that's why I'm coming back and fighting for them.
What wedding czar did you consult before you got engaged, Congressman?
Well, my wedding czar is Julia, my fiance.
Yes.
And I'll let her make the big decisions here.
Well, congratulations to both of you. Thanks for joining us, and good luck with the hearing.
Thank you, Brian. I'll tell Julia you gave your thanks.
And I hope to be invited.
All right. So Billy asked the question about czars and how they came about in the United States, or if they are in fact listed in the Constitution of the United States. And so here is the history of czars here in the United States of America. Czars are, as they are generally related to the federal government of the United States, have a long and rather confusing history. Since George Washington became the first United States president, the use of special advisors to the president have been utilized by the office. So to answer the question, Billy, George Washington was the first to use a special advisor to the president. These advisors have always been appointed directly by the president and are accountable to that office solely. These appointees are not the same as presidential cabinet members. Cabinet appointees are vetted, they're taken an oath, and are accountable to someone other than the president. Now, the term czar, as it is used in the connection with the United States political structure, is an informal, media-created term used to refer to certain high-level executive branch officials. There has never been any U.S. government office official with the title czar, but that's what we call them. More specifically, a czar refers to a sub-cabinet-level advisor within the executive branch of the United States. However, Obama's czars have been responsible for direct policy implementation over the course of the last 2.5 years. Direct policy input, superseding that of the cabinet. Here is where the Obama administration goes astray. Here is where we have a fear factor and a deep concern about the Obama administration's czars or special advisors, because in many cases during the course of this administration, and I'll cite a few just a little bit later, the Obama administration czars or special advisors have leapfrogged cabinet members and put forth policy. It has been widely reported over the last few months that Obama has met with only three of his cabinet members since taking office. The rest he has yet to actually sit down and have a conversation with. And yet he has taken the opportunity to appoint more czars than all other presidents, than every other president. Not combined, but every other president. As often happens with the creation of a new administrative post, that title has quickly morphed to the word czar. Ironically, the term drug czar was coined during the Reagan administration by now Vice President Joe Biden, who at the time was Senator Joe Biden of Delaware. Biden was quoted as saying, "We need to have a drug czar to oversee these operations," in reference to when the Reagan administration's Justice Department introduced a plan to spend up to $200 million for anti-drug enforcement efforts. So we can thank that idiot Joe Biden for the actual term czar. Isn't that ironic? Because up to that point, they were simply known as special advisors. The media caught on to Biden's use of the term czar, and now every special advisor to the president since has been given the unofficial title of czar. So I'm glad that I was able to put that out there. Now, let's get right back to my least favorite czar, John Holdren, or if you insist, special advisor to the president. We won't call this lunatic and madman and very dangerous individual a czar. We will call him what he is, a special advisor to the president of the United States, because I believe that calling him what he is far more damning than simply calling him a czar. He is the special advisor to the president has stated in his own words, adding a sterilant to the drinking water or staple food is a suggestion that seems to horrify people more than most proposals for involuntary fertility control. Indeed, this would pose some very difficult political, legal, and social questions. Damn straight. To say nothing of the technical problems. No such sterilant exists today, nor does one appear to be under development. To be acceptable, such a substance would have to meet some rather stiff requirements. It must be uniformly effective, despite widely varying doses received by individuals, and despite varying degrees of fertility and sensitivity among individuals. It must be free of dangerous or unpleasant side effects, and it must have no effect on members of the opposite sex, children, old people, pets, or livestock. This clown has actually said these things, folks. The special advisor to the President of the United States for Science has considered very deeply mass sterilization of humans through drugs in the water supply or food. And it's okay as long as it doesn't harm livestock. Now, in the world that I come from, and you, this moron would be in a in a padded cell, or at least he would be watched extremely closely by my FBI, my CIA, my Defense Intelligence Agency, my DEA, my ATF. I'd have somebody on his ass day and night watching this clown. But no. No, 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 no. He sits at the table of our President Barack Obama and advises him. This is a WTF moment, folks. Here it is, right here and right now. What the? Let's all say it in unison. What the? Yes. John is really starting to scare me. Putting sterilants in the water supply while you correctly surmise that this suggestion seems to horrify people? John, you idiot. You are apparently not among those people it horrifies. Because in your extensive list of problems with this possible scheme, there is no mention whatsoever of any ethical concerns or moral issues. In your view, John, the only impediment to involuntary mass sterilization of the population is that it ought to affect everyone equally and not have any unintended side effects or hurt animals. That's sweet. But hey, if we could sterilize all the humans safely without hurting the livestock, that would be peachy. The fact that Holdren has no moral qualms about such a deeply invasive and unethical scheme, aside from the fact that it would be difficult to implement, is extremely unsettling. And in a sane world, all by itself, would disqualify him from holding a position of power in government or as a meter maid. Can you imagine if you, Richard Martin, you, Caden, me, Billy, Beach Bum, Karen, walked around talking about putting stuff in the food or in the drinking water to sterilize people? That's called terrorism. That's a terrorist act. We'd be thrown in jail. Or at least our phones would be tapped. Or a damn interview with the Secret Service or somebody, or the FBI. Now, can Barack Obama say that, well, hey, I didn't know any of this. I didn't know that he felt this way. Maybe he'll give the reasoning that, he was just, no. That's right. Barack Obama did speak to this issue. He said that he was just a kid when that book was written, so he didn't really know much about it. He actually said that. He was just a kid. Okay, but the dude is in your cabinet right now. Do you think that even Jimmy Carter would have this clown in his cabinet? Not even Jimmy Carter, I suspect. Certainly Ronald Reagan would have this guy followed everywhere he goes. He couldn't even go to the Walmart without an escort. Now, maybe he's just joking. You're right, Richard. This is a crime against humanity. Involuntary sterilization. Now, we'll move on to my favorite or least favorite czar, Mr. Holdren. Let's go with his next utterance. Remember now, this isn't his opinion. This isn't the opinion of somebody who read something that he wrote and then they refashioned it. What I am reading to you and what my voice is saying are his actual words, what he wrote down and what he said in live appearances. Nothing is taken out of context here. I want to be clear about that. And I'd also like, if you're interested in this subject, to look it up yourself to make sure that you understand that what I'm saying is not my opinion here. This clown sits at the table of the President of the United States, and he can't figure out why people think he's a socialist and a moron. Here we go. Involuntary fertility control. A program of sterilizing women after their second or third child, despite the relatively greater difficulty of the operation than a vasectomy, might be easier to implement than trying to sterilize men. Okay. Once more, for those of you who have not heard, this guy sits at the table of the President of the United States. He's been appointed a special advisor for science to the President of the United States. And Barack Obama cannot understand why folks think he's dangerous and a socialist and a Marxist and perhaps a communist. They can't figure it out. The development of a long-term sterilizing capsule that could be implemented under the skin, under the skin and removed when pregnancy is desired, opens additional possibilities for cohesive fertility control. The capsule could be implemented at puberty and might be removable with official permission for a limited number of births. Now, what's the phrase here? With official permission. Now, in the above quote, John Holdren envisions a society in which the government implants a long-term sterilization capsule in all girls as soon as they reach puberty, whom they must apply for official permission to temporarily remove the capsule and be allowed to get pregnant at some later date. Alternately, he wants a society that sterilizes all women once they have two children. Now, my question to you is, do you want to live in such a society? Because I sure the hell don't. And where would he get all this power? Don't you ask that question? Where would all this power come from for him to do these things? I mean, the Constitution would have to be thrown out into the trash. Am I right? I understand that this guy is a nut job. It's obvious here, or at least extremely sinister, because as is written in the chat room, Hitler had the same idea. You're over the limit, me too, Karen. Karen writes that she guesses she's over the limit. Okay, now let's move on to our next one. The kind of people who cause social deterioration can be compelled to not have children. If some individuals contribute to, I'm quoting here, if some individuals contribute to general social deterioration by overproducing children, and if the need is compelling, They can be required by law to exercise reproductive responsibility, just as they can be required to exercise responsibility in their resource consumption patterns, providing they are not denied equal protection. Now, where do we start with this? Where do we start with this? I mean, come on. You got to be kidding me, right? Now, to me, this is in some ways the most horrifying sentence in the entire book. And it had a lot of competition, I got to tell you that right now. Because here, Haldren reveals that moral judgment would be involved in determining who gets sterilized or is forced to abort their babies. Proper, decent people will be left alone. But those who contribute to social deterioration could be forced to exercise reproductive responsibility, which could only mean one thing in my mind: compulsory abortion or involuntary sterilization. What world is this clown living in? What planet is he living in? Does he think this could actually occur in the United States of America? Well, obviously, he's been given some credibility by being appointed a special advisor to science for the Barack Hussein Obama White House. He sits at the table of the White House. He has the president's ear. Is this not disturbing to you? Anybody? This alone, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to tell you what right now. High gas prices, so what? High food prices, so what? Unemployment, so what? Barack Obama needs to be thrown out of office on this appointee alone. Forget all the other stuff. This is a matter, what manner of insanity is this? Deterioration? Is Haldren seriously suggesting that some people contribute to social deterioration more than others, and thus should be sterilized or forced to have abortions to prevent them from propagating their own kind or their kind? Isn't that eugenics? Plain and simple? And isn't eugenics universally condemned as a grotesquely evil practice? Why is this guy sitting at the table of the President of the United States of America? Why is this guy sitting at the President's table, y'all? Answer me. Answer my question. How is Obama allowed to get away with this crap? We've already been down this road before. In one of the most shameful episodes in the history of the United States jurisprudence, the Supreme Court ruled in the infamous 1927 Buck versus Bell case that the state of Virginia had the right to sterilize a woman named Carney Buck against her will, based solely on the spurious criteria that she was feeble-minded and promiscuous, with Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes concluding, three generations of imbeciles are enough. Yeah, uh-huh. And nowadays, of course, we look back at that ruling in horror, as eugenics as a concept has been forever discredited. In fact, the United Nations now regards forced sterilization as a crime against humanity, just as was indicated in the chat room by, I believe, Billy. Proving, Haldren seems to think that he can get off the eugenics hook. Caden has put something up in the chat room. I'm going to go ahead and pop the link up here. Play it in a little bit. Well, started to play already. No. No, 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 no. You say Holdren isn't claiming that some kind of people contribute to social deterioration more than others. Rather, he's stating that anyone who overproduces children thereby contribute to social deterioration and needs to be stopped from having more. If so, how is that more palatable? It seems Holdren and his co-authors have not really thought this through. Because what they're suggesting is a nightmarish totalitarian society, and maybe that's what Mr. Holdren wants. Maybe that's what that clown wants. But not only is Holdren's statements horrifying and the voice of what anyone in their right mind would consider to be a lunatic, the horrifying thought is that the president picked him as his special advisor to science. Now, put yourself in a position of being president of the United States. And you'd like to have a science advisor. And you pick up a book by Mr. Holdren called Ecoscience, Population, Resources, Environment. And you read through it. Because I was just a kid in 1977, and I've heard of this clown. But the president is supposed to be a genius, brilliant. And you read through the book, and you read mass sterilizations of humans through drugs in the water supply. Government can control women's reproduction by sterilizing them or implanting mandatory long-term birth control. The kind of people who cause social deterioration can be compelled to not have children, and then you say, hey, this guy is the shit. This is my man. Get him in this office. We got to have this guy as our special advisor on science. Look at the good. Look at all this goodness he wrote here. I dig this. I dig it the most. So he's got to be my science czar. Because he writes right here and right now that nothing is wrong or illegal about the government dictating family size. Because here I am, President Barack Obama, or your President Richard Martin, or President Billy, or President Karen Hunter, or Caden. And you're sitting at the Oval Office desk and you read this. In today's world, however, the number of children in the family is a matter of profound public concern. The law regulates other highly personal matters. For example, no one may lawfully have more than one spouse at a time. Why should the law not be able to prevent a person from having more than two children? So here you are, Caden. Here you are, Richard. You say, wow, that is profound. I gotta have this guy in my cabinet. I gotta have this guy in my cabinet right here and right now. Wow, this is some heavy stuff. Is that what Barack Obama was thinking when he said that, when he appointed this clown? Do you think? Why should the law not be able to prevent a person from having two or more children? Who is going to put that law into effect, I wonder? Why? I'll tell you why, Johnny boy. Because the principles of habeas corpus upon which our nation rests automatically
renders any compulsory abortion scheme to be unconstitutional, since it guarantees the freedom of each individual body from detention or interference until that person has been convicted of a crime. Or are you seriously suggesting that should bureaucrats decide that the country is overpopulated, the mere act of pregnancy may be made a crime? Now, your humble guy here, C. Robert Jones, is no legal scholar, but it seems that Holdren is even less of a legal scholar than I am. Many of the bizarre schemes suggested in eco-science rely on seriously flawed legal reasoning. The book is not so much about science, but instead about reinterpreting the Constitution to allow totalitarian population control issues. This guy is living in a world where that there's no Constitution, that there is a ruler, I suppose. Now, I'm going to play this brief clip about the president's czars, and then we'll get back to the subject of Mr. Holdren here. The president's science czar, the president's special advisor.
Is President Obama hiding something about his czars? Now, today some House Republicans proposed 3 congressional resolutions having to do with the president's czars. So what's the problem? What do the Republicans want to know? One of the Republicans who wants answers is Congressman Patrick McHenry. He joins us live. Nice to see you, sir.
Thanks for having me, Greta.
So what's your problem with the czars? Certainly President Obama's not the first president to have czars, although he may have more than the others.
Well, it's like saying the government spends money, Greta. I mean, sure, the government spent money in the past, but President Obama's doing it to an unprecedented rate and level. And sure, former presidents have had czars. Doesn't make it right then, but the president, this president's had dozens upon dozens just in the first couple of months.
But Senator Byrd, who's a member of the president's party, wrote a letter back in February, and he was complaining because these czars were being appointed not going through any sort of congressional oversight, no advice and consent by the Senate. So that rubbed him the wrong way. Is that a problem you have with this process?
Well, the question is, what do they do? If they're high-ranking government officials that are making policy, then they should be confirmed by the Senate. And if they're not making policy and they're actually not making major actions, then they're just simply figureheads and they shouldn't be collecting a salary. So either way, I don't think it's a just way to go, whether it's a constitutional question or just simply a funding question.
I don't get this. I'm looking through the list. Afghanistan czar, why isn't that Department of Defense or State Department? Border czar, why isn't that Homeland Security? California water czar, why isn't that agriculture? Central region czar, why isn't that State Department? Domestic violence czar, why isn't that justice? Drugs czar, why isn't that DEA? Economic, why isn't that labor? I mean, I go through this list. I think we've already got this monstrosity government. Why does he need these?
Well, I don't know if it's just simply a question of not sure how to govern or that they want to raise things to another level. You can look at Carol Browner, for instance, who is the head of the EPA during the Clinton administration. She now serves as the International Climate Change Czar, and she is in charge, according to her own words, of her policy in the Department of Energy and the EPA. So it seems to me that she's acting as a super cabinet secretary. It seems as though cabinet secretaries are not truly relevant anymore, that you have to be a czar of some sort to have real authority in this administration.
And we should probably point out that if you have a cabinet level job or an ambassador or even a lower level, is that you actually go up to Capitol Hill, you fill out all sorts of forms, you have all those the members go through, your Senate go through, mm-hmm. That's scrutiny. And we've seen what happens when people aren't scrutinized, we can learn unfortunate things later.
A great example is Van Jens, who was the green job czar, touted by the White House. And apparently the White House didn't do a simple Google search to see this fellow's extremist background and the associations that he had. Much less his writings. And so you can see that the simple vetting process of going through confirmation before the Senate is really one that the founding fathers thought was important. And even today, I think even the media finds it important to have some scrutiny, to understand people's backgrounds, their direction, and furthermore, making sure that these cabinet secretaries or czars are held accountable to the public and the Capitol Hill.
And I should point out, other presidents have had this president has more, and many of these men and women here, they're fine men and women. Senator George Mitchell is on it for me. I mean, there are lots of good names that we'd recognize, but why not have tough scrutiny of everybody, because we don't want mistakes anyway. Nice to see you, Congressman.
Great to see you again.
Up next, a very special interview. No other network is...
Okay, but here's what I like to add to that that discussion. Why is it that most of President Obama's czars are extreme thinkers, extreme socialist, Marxist folks who write really crazy things like what I just read to you? Now, bear in mind that the average pay for a special advisor to the president, or czar, if you will, is around $88,000. But that varies greatly from czar to czar. But the average salary is around $88,000, and what the hell do they do for that? That's a lot of jack for a part-time job, because I don't see a czar or special advisor to the presidency sitting there coming into office every single day and actually working his butt off for that $88,000. All right? And as is indicated, other presidents have had special advisors or czars. This guy has the most. And to a man, well, with very few exceptions, to be fair, all these guys are lunatics. And yeah, I guess you could say they think outside the box. That's not always a good thing, to think outside the box. Let's get back to my favorite guy, Mr. Holdren, special advisor to the president for science, our science czar. He'd like a planetary regime. And he suggests that the planetary regime, that's a quote, planetary regime, end quote, that the planetary regime should control the global economy and dictate by force the number of children allowed to be born. What the hell does this guy have against children and people? The world has to be peopled, doesn't it? I guess just not so many. I wonder if Holdren is a dad or a granddad. And if he has like a third child, can you imagine what that third child must feel like? He probably doesn't feel like he's much wanted. All right. Now, a direct quote from Holdren himself. Perhaps, he says, I quote, "Those agencies, combined with UNEP and the United Nations population agencies..." I didn't know that there were population agencies within the United Nations. Did you? "Might eventually be developed into a planetary regime, sort of an international super agency for population, resources, and environment. Such a comprehensive planetary regime could control the development, administration, conservation, and distribution of all natural resources, renewable or non-renewable, at least insofar as international implications exist. Thus, the regime could have the power to control population not only in the atmosphere and the oceans, but also in such freshwater bodies as rivers and lakes that cross international boundaries or that discharge into the oceans. The regime might also be a logical central agency for regulating all international trade, perhaps including assistance from DCs and LDCs, and including all food on the international market. The planetary regime might be given responsibility for determining the optimum population for the world and for each region, and for arbitrating various countries as shares within their regional limits.
control of population size might remain the responsibility of each government, but the regime should have some power to enforce the agreed limits. Where do we start here? Well, in case you were wondering exactly who would enforce these forced abortions and mass sterilization laws, why, it'll be the planetary regime, of course. Starting to sound a little bit like Star Wars to you? I should have seen that one coming, really. Richard writes in the chat room, GMO foods are most likely part of this agency. Now, the rest of this passage speaks for itself. Once you added up all the things the planetary regime, which has a nice science fiction ring to it, doesn't it, will control, it becomes quite clear that it will have total power over the global economy. Since, according to Holdren, this planetary regime will control all natural resources, renewable or non-renewable, which basically means every damn thing, as well as all food and commerce on the oceans and any rivers, the mighty Mississippi included, that discharge into the oceans, i.e., basically 99% of all navigable rivers. What's left? Not much, right? Okay. Now, for all of us crazy people out there who believe that there's a new world order coming our way, that there's an all-governing one-world government coming our way, for all of us crazy people who believe in that crap, it's not so much crap now, is it, folks? No. Because what this clown wrote, he wrote in 1977. So clearly, the idea of a new world order or planetary regime has been considered long ago, 1977, and probably much before that. It actually started with that idiot Woodrow Wilson. Okay, but I haven't gotten to the best part yet. Here's the best part. Or the worst, if you insist. He goes on to say, we will need to surrender national sovereignty to an armed international police force. Folks, this guy sits at the president's table as his advisor, science policy advisor, or science czar. He sits at the table. He was appointed directly to the president of the United States. He answers to no one save the president of the United States. I must insist that you get that. And that guy who has the president's ear says this: we will need to surrender national sovereignty to an armed international police force. If this could be accomplished, security might be provided by an armed international organization, a global analog of a police force. Many people have recognized this as a goal, but the way to reach it remains obscure in a world where factionalism seems, if anything, to be increasing. The first step necessarily involves partial surrender of sovereignty to an international organization. Now, are we seeing that happen right now with this administration? And what did Obama say? We cannot rely solely on our military
to achieve the national security goals that we have set. We need a civilian security force. I committed the whole line to memory. Just as powerful, just as well funded, etc., etc., etc. I wonder if this civilian security force has anything to do with Holdren, what he's talking about. And what national security goals was Barack Obama talking about when he made that speech? The other shoe has just dropped. So, we're expected to voluntarily surrender national sovereignty to an international organization or the planetary regime, presumably, which will be armed and have the ability to act as a police force. And as we noticed in previous quotes, exactly which rules this armed international police force will be enforcing: compulsory birth control and all economic activity. It would be laughable. All of this would be laughable if Holdren weren't so deadly serious. This guy was not writing a comic book, folks. He was not writing for amusement's sake. This is not science fiction. He was serious. He is serious about these things. He has been appointed. I'm going to say again, for anybody who's listening to the show, new, just came in right now, this guy was appointed by the President of the United States to sit at the table to provide policy guidelines or guidance to the president for science. Science czar. Do you want this man to be in charge of science and technology in the United States? Well, it's too late. He's already in charge. Billy in the chat room writes, Satan is alive and well. Well, you're damn straight. Because I tell you what, Billy, people who talk about a new world order or one world government, as I had mentioned numerous times in my shows about John and Revelation, a new world order, a one world government, end times, all that stuff I talked about in previous blog talk shows, all the stuff that's out there, this one world government, open borders. Remember the open borders discussion that's been going around all over the place? George Soros' dream? All of that. Those of us who believe that the world is headed in that direction are labeled as lunatics. But this guy wrote this stuff in 1977. You're science czar, everyone. Stand up and give him a big hand, a big round of applause. Any of you out there who are considering voting for Barack Obama the next time around, this show should seriously put serious questions in your mind as to whether or not this guy deserves your vote. Because you have to say to yourself, if Barack Obama is associating with this guy to the extent that he has given him a position in the administration, unofficial, okay, policy advisor, he's a policy advisor. I have an accountant and I have an attorney. And I pay my accountant, I pay my attorney to give me advice. And a lot of times I follow their advice. That's what they're there for. That's why they're being paid. So one would wonder, is Obama following the advice of his science czar, Mr. Holdren? Perhaps Holdren has put a bug in Obama's ear. regarding surrendering our national sovereignty. Or perhaps Holdren is sitting and having lunch with the president and saying to the president, we are facing a global overpopulation catastrophe that must be resolved at all cost by the year 2015. No, he didn't say that. But he did write that as of 1977, we're facing a global overpopulation catastrophe that must be resolved at all cost by the year 2000. He wrote that. He also wrote that humanity cannot afford to muddle through the rest of the 20th century. The risks are too great. The stakes are too high. This may be the last opportunity to choose our own and our own decadence destiny. Descendants' destinies. Yeah, which descendants would those be? Because he's trying to kill them off before they're even born. Failing to choose or make the wrong choices may lead to catastrophe. But it must never be forgotten that the right choice could lead to a much better world. I suppose that would be a world without too many people. Now, what I just read to you is the final paragraph of the book, which is included here only to show how embarrassingly inaccurate this scientific projection was. In 1977, Holdren thought we were teetering on the brink of a global catastrophe, and he proposed implementing fascist rules and laws to stave off the impending disaster. Luckily, we ignored his warnings, yet the world managed to survive anyway without the need to punish ourselves with the oppressive society which Holdren proposed. Yes, there is still overpopulation, but the problem is caused not the problem's causes are not as morally repugnant as the solutions which Holdren wanted to adopt. I actually don't disagree with everything Holdren says. I agree with him that overpopulation is a problem and that much of the environmental degradation that has happened is due to in large part to overpopulation, mostly in the developing world. Where we disagree is the solution. While Holdren does occasionally advocate for milder solutions elsewhere in his book, to be fair, his basic premise is that the population explosion has gotten so out of control that only the most oppressive and totalitarian measures can possibly stop humanity from stripping the planet bare and causing catastrophe beyond our imagining. Holdren has apparently no problem saying we should force people not to have children and by any means necessary, and that we are part ways. I mean, but that's where we part ways. I draw the line at even the hint of compulsory compliance to draconian laws about pregnancy and abortion. Holdren does not hesitate to cross that line again and again and again and again and again without a second thought. My solution would be adopt social policies that are known to lead to voluntary, not coercive, trends toward lower birth rates. Here's the thing. Obama said it himself, that he's going to attempt to teach his two young ladies proper morals and values. But if that fails, his actual words were he doesn't want them punished with a baby. I hope I can find the clip here before we're done, of Obama saying that he doesn't want his children to be punished with a baby. Yeah. Yeah. So here. Let's go ahead and I'll go ahead and play it for you. Got it right here.
I've got two daughters, 9 years old and 6 years old. If they make a mistake, I don't want them punished for the baby.
My fiance and I want to have children one day. Just not right now. I mean, why should we be punished with a baby we don't want and can't afford?
Our frat party got a little out of hand, and I hooked up with one of the girls from Beta Gamma. I'm paying for half of the abortion, but why should either one of us be punished with a baby we don't want?
My husband and I thought we were done having kids. I mean, I've just gone back to work, and we just really can't afford this new one. Why should I, why should my family be punished with another baby? My boyfriend and I usually use a condom, but one night, well, you know. Anyway, I got pregnant. Why should I be punished with a baby?
Over 90% of the 1.4 million abortions that take place each year in America terminate accidental pregnancies. In other words, abortion is used as just another form of birth control. If you believe this is okay, then vote for Barack Obama and Joe Biden. They're the most pro-abortion major party candidates to ever run for the White House. They have promised to do all they can to protect the so-called right to abortion for any reason, including birth control.
Now, I want to make clear the fact that I don't agree with abortion. I also want to make clear the fact that I don't believe that it's my position to judge or to have any say whatsoever in how a woman, what a woman does with her body. It's not my place. I have a friend who, back in the early 90s, she has had three abortions. I took her to the clinic for one of them and sat with her. Nope. Wasn't my child. I just went with her as a friend to the clinic. To this day, my good friend has no children. If she had had at least one of the children, they would be adult age by now. Probably productive members of society and doing really great things for the world, our country, who knows. But she remains alone and childless. I wonder if she sometimes sees women with children who are of the age that her children would have been and thinks about her choice. I want to thank everybody for listening, all the guests, Caden, Billy, Beachbum, Karen, Richard, everybody. I know Tesla, Cool Mike, and some of the other guys are in the other room and the other shows. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for being here. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And we'll talk again on Monday. I wonder, could we start again? Could we? Oh my God. Okay. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. We live in a crazy world, don't we? It's a world gone mad. All right. We don't have any exit music, so we're just going to get out of here. Good night, everybody. Hey, please check in with GDT and Cool Mike at 11:30. Hope I didn't forget that.